Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Jim Brewster, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Brewster this evening, press star 3 at any time on your phone's keypad. Again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Now let's welcome Senator Jim Brewster.
Thank you, Hugh. Thank you to all the area residents participating on tonight's call. Some of the best feedback I get and ideas I receive directly from constituents. I'm Senator Jim Brewster, and I'm holding this live telephone town hall to talk about school safety and to answer any questions that you may have. This format will allow you to listen, offer your opinion, and even ask a question from the comfort of your home. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, press star 3 on your phone.
Thank you, Senator. Just as a reminder, as the Senator was saying, if you have a question for Senator Brewster tonight, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. And, Senator, as we're having folks join us here tonight, what we're talking about this evening is school safety. You are very much engaged in this issue in Harrisburg. You've sponsored legislation on the issue, but you just went through a process of serving on the School Safety Committee. You're one of the members of the committee. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement in school safety and about the committee and where we're going from here?
Well, the School Safety and Security Commission was established under Act 44 in 2018. There are 17 members. There are a number of elected officials, a number of law enforcement folks, architectural folks. Superintendent from Franklin Regional was on the commission. So there is a wide range of experience on the commission. And we knew from last year's budget we had $60 million to disperse to applicants throughout the year. The first thing we did was to distribute $25,000 to each public school. I believe they came out to $12.5 million. The second half of the money was distributed later on in the year with regard to meritorious grants. And by that I mean those who received the $20,000 could ask for more money based on certain criteria. For example, they could ask for money upwards of $350,000 per application. While we didn't disperse anything to any one project that high, their projects were important to us because we wanted to see the creativity that school districts had. In other words, we know we can't fund every project to the fullest, but we wanted to see if certain schools were ahead of the curve on what they were doing within their district. And every school was required to send in a survey, which added to the data that we had. So we have completed the distribution of the $60 million, and as of the end of June, we will be hopefully approving a new budget, which will include additional money for next year to be distributed. And I just want to say this to you at the outset, while the criteria was well conceived and it was done through the PCCD, Pennsylvania Crime and Delinquency Department, we didn't get everywhere we wanted to be. And there were school districts that were not funded on the second round that were hoping to make eligible more on the second round this coming year. And we can talk more about that later after we take some calls.
All right. Senator, just as a reminder for those that have just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, we're talking about school safety here. You can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, before we get to the callers, just as a follow-up, school safety involves a number of aspects. It's and engages on a number of issues. Can you talk a little bit about some of the issues that are involved? For example, safety on school buses relative to safety at buildings and other aspects of the school safety issue.
Right. Thank you for the question. Yes. As we go through this process, one of the reasons I wanted to have the town hall, I'm in the process of putting together legislation that I believe is comprehensive. And school safety should have a baseline. In other words, every school district and every family in Pennsylvania should be comfortable to know that the baseline requirement for school safety is in place in our school district. And we need to help fund that as we go through the process. For example, physical security. Most people know what that means, and it varies by school district. Some have really done a great job. Others are lagging behind, usually because of funding, but the physical security, whether it's metal detectors, whether it's be cameras, the blue boxes in the hallways. The second category I have is really important to me, and I think important to all of us in the Commonwealth, and that's mental health. We talk about why these things occur, why these horrific events have happened in schools or in synagogues or other places where people gather. And my vision of that is that every school district should have a psychiatrist on retainer, a school psychologist in the school, all the agencies that provide 800 numbers that can help parents, teachers, and students anonymously. It's important that we have that available. And it's important that the communities, the police chief, the mayors, the PTAs, the school boards, the president of the school board, the teachers, everyone should know what the baseline is, not just in their school district, but across the state, just so they know it's consistent. The third element is, I just recently added, was environmental, so that there's air monitoring equipment outside of every school. Now, we have those out there now in some schools if they're nearby industrial plants. Check for mold, asbestos, lead in the water. So when I say comprehensive, if you have a student in any school district in Pennsylvania, you'll know that these three categories are one being audited, and I've reached out to our Auditor General, who I believe, Eugene DePasquale, he's done a great job going through the school districts. He understands and he speaks often about the mental health issues, and he is bought off on the concept. Later on this year, probably in the fall, we'll be doing a press conference to talk about the comprehensive bill, which will be completed by then and then introduced in the Senate. And the reason for these calls like this is to see, make sure we didn't miss anything. No idea is a bad idea. And for those that are listening, whether you're a school board member or a parent, I'm trying to marry this comprehensive bill with the money available in the budget for school safety. And for example, if we get $60 million again, I hope it's more, but if we get $60 million, we want to do two things. We want to make sure those school districts that weren't eligible for the second round are reconsidered. And secondly, that the baseline is adopted by the commission and we fund those issues that are in the baseline. Some of these remediations are not expensive. The air quality monitor outside of the building is not expensive. The lead in water in school districts is not an expensive fix. Excuse me. So these are the things that I'm trying to gather that we can put into a bill that will give some comfort level to parents, teachers, and administrators.
Well, thank you, Senator. Again, for those who just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Brewster this evening, we're talking about all aspects of school safety. You can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to our first caller tonight. We're going to go to Eileen in Glassport. Eileen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Yes, Senator Brewster. I am a resident of Glassport for over 50 years, South Allegheny School District. My question has been over many years, why are there no seat belts on the school buses to protect the children? I know the driver is aware that they're up and moving while the bus is moving, but her eyes need to be on the road. I feel that the safety of a child is very important when riding on a school bus. I don't know the expense or the cost of a seat belt, but what is the expense and the cost of losing a child due to a terrible accident? Could this please be looked into, and are there any legislations in process, anything being done to look into this?
Eileen, thank you. That's a great question. And the answer to your question is yes to all the elements of your question. First of all, there are some bills that are percolating through the House with regard to seatbelts on buses. I may introduce one of my own. I'm like you. I'm shocked that we require everybody to have seatbelts and the seats for young children, but yet we have young children on buses that are not strapped in. So that's an important issue. And in addition to that, Eileen, some buses monitor their bus activity with cameras. That's another consideration for the baseline. We've had obviously some pretty horrific events on school buses where people get on the bus or children are left on the bus. And there's, you're right, it is a key element to overall safety, and I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't have it written down here but in my notes, but it is something that will be part of the comprehensive bill. As far as the expense, obviously what we don't want to do is burden the school districts with expenses and then audit them to compliance and not have them have the funding to do it. And we don't want to do this by raising taxes. I want to be clear about that. None of the things that I believe need to be done, and you do as well, Eileen, will cost the taxpayers anything through school tax increase. I like to do it through the money that we're circulating. Now, someone may be saying, well, Jim, isn't that taxpayer dollars? Well, yes, it is. But if we don't make it available for school safety, that $60 million or whatever we have this year is going to go to something else. And I'd rather redirect it here. So it's a good thought. It's something we want to do. I know there's a couple bills percolating. I can't tell you the exact expense to put seatbelts in every bus, but I will say this to you. One of the things we could start with is we may be able to grandfather some buses in because we want to make sure we don't overburden anybody, but certainly as new buses are bought and purchased, they ought to be in there.
Yes.
Thank you, Eileen. Thank you very much for your call. Again, for those that have just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Brewster this evening, you press *3 on your phone's keypad. Press *3 on your phone's keypad. If you have a question for Senator Brewster, we're talking about school safety this evening. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Richard in Monroeville. Richard, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Hello, this is Mr. McClain. I'd like to ask you, why don't we have stricter laws for these people who are breaking these rules as to getting into schools, as to beating up people? And then the last lady just brought up very good, where kids were not seated on buses. I have been in my car driving down and toward Pitcairn, and the kids are running around all around the place. Yeah, didn't do much good to go and report them because that was the last day of school. We've got to have stricter laws for these kids who are not paying attention and doing right in school.
Well, Richard, thank you for the call. Parental responsibility is something that comes up often when I speak. Now, we all know that most of our parents do a great job, and this is not an indictment on parents in general. But frankly speaking, you know, parents have to take some responsibility for the children before they get on, when they get off, and even when they're on the bus. And we talk about truancy, for example, which falls in line with what you just said. And if I told you the expense of school districts having to go to magistrates on truancy issues, you would be shocked, and most people would be. But I agree with you. We're working on those things. The difficulty with that particular issue is trying to find where the good ends and the bad begins, and who's going to testify to the extent that a child did this. You're dealing with juveniles, for example. And when you have parents both maybe working, maybe the children are living with grandma. So there's a lot of different scenarios that cause some of this behavioral issue. And look, I mean, I go back a long way, and I'm not going to say how long, but when I was in school, discipline was a little more strict. I'm not suggesting we go back that far, but you sound like someone that would be my age, and when we misbehaved at the school bus or in the school, we had detention or whatever, my parents made sure that when I got home, I got detention again. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's a little harder to capture just how to handle that, but I agree with you 100%. It's part of the process. I think whenever parents get frustrated, and this is a very small percentage, I hear of teachers being attacked, school bus drivers being attacked, that's unacceptable. And if there's a problem with that teacher or that school bus driver, there's a way to handle that complaint. And getting into a physical altercation is not appropriate. But, Richard, it's a good call, and, again, it's part of this, the discussion. Thank you.
Richard, thank you very much for your call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad. We're going to go to Rich in Clareton. Rich, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Hi, Senator. This is Rich. I'm on the Clareton School Board. I just want to commend you for being able to get the school district of Clareton $135,000. With that money, we've been able to put cameras in the school. We have also been able to install instant identifiers so that a person's criminal record or child abuse can come right up right at that point in time before he even gets into the school. We've been able to pay for our security guards. So the $135,000 has allowed us to comply with your base, your first step in keeping the school safe. So I think that you've done a good job, but I also like to ask that this continue and that we be eligible, school districts that have already received funds, be eligible in the second round or the second bill that's coming up this year. Thank you.
Well, Rich, thank you for your call, and I want to thank you and your school board for a magnificent job you've done in Clareton in difficult times. The folks in Clareton deserve to have education for their children. You and your board's been able to do that with your superintendent and your teachers, and I know how difficult it's been. And as you reminded me, Rich, one time when I was there, you said Clareton's won a lot of football championships, and you were very clear to make it that the school performance had gone up as well, and I commend you for that because that's important. Yes, I mean, the money you received is basically what I'm talking about when I talk about baseline. There's such a huge gap between school districts in terms of what the local school boards have been able to put in place with regard to security, and most of it's driven by their financial wherewithal. And as we all know, I mean, you have 500 school districts, and some are in very affluent areas, and some are in areas where we have fallen on hard times. And as you know, I have 18 school districts in my senatorial district, very different in terms of what they're able to do. But excuse me, the idea of getting more money so that you can use the creativity and the strategic planning that you have is important to all of us here in Harrisburg. And we're going to continue to fight, Rich, to do that. And that's why your call is important, because you just answered a question. I wasn't sure whether you had gotten cameras or not, but I think this is the day we live in. We have to have monitoring systems in place so that we can get the proper officials there, whether it be police, principals or whoever, to get to a site very quickly so that we can keep children safe and keep staff and teachers safe as well. So thank you for the call, Rich.
Rich, thank you very much for the phone call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster this evening, we're talking about school safety, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Mark in McKeesport. Mark, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Hello, good evening. This is Mark Holtzman. I'm the superintendent of McKeesport Area School District, and just calling to comment and also ask a question. I kind of want to comment on the school safety conversation, because I think oftentimes people think of it as the schools internally are unsafe, and I just want to clarify that the safety initiatives that McKeesport and many of our school districts are interested in are keeping us safe from some of the unfortunate things from the outside. It's not about necessarily safety from within. Our schools are extremely safe places for students to get educated and to thrive. And I just wanted to make that clear, because I think sometimes in urban environments, there's a misconception that there's unsafe educational environments for children. And we don't believe in that, and obviously the statistics show that. So I wanted to say that, you know, Senator Brewster and I have had a lasting relationship, and he's always been supportive. But one of the challenges that we're faced financially is dealing with trying to continue to stay ahead of school safety. And we've done many, many things over the last 20 years that many other school districts may have not decided to do, that we've always done around school safety. But one of the issues is trying to find ways to kind of fund unfunded mandates. And we talk about some of the requirements and meeting the standards of Act 44. And unfortunately, we weren't one of the school districts that had the opportunity to benefit from the Part B of the grant, and we're just looking forward to the possibility in the future of maybe benefiting from that, so we can look at ways to maybe update some of our buildings in a way that makes it a little safer for children. But one of the biggest expenses and challenges that we're faced with is obviously a charter school tuition expense of over $7 million of fewer than a $70 million budget. So you could see where my challenges lie as far as trying to continue to stay ahead of school safety, but also pay a large portion of my budget out to charter school tuition, which kind of leaves me at a disadvantage. And with the recent statistics showing that approximately 28 school districts out of 500 in the state of Pennsylvania are considered urban, the urban districts like McKeesport are ones hit the hardest by charter schools and ones that are hit the hardest about financial shortcomings. So I just wanted to share that and maybe hear your thoughts about it.
Thank you, Mark, for the call. And let me just say this. Mr. Holtzman is one of the finest superintendents you'll find, and I have many in my district, and all very hardworking folks, and hopefully they'll call this evening. Mark brings up a couple good points. One, in the schools I've been in, I've always felt that the children and the teachers were safe. What you can't predict and what you can't anticipate is what outside element's going to end up inside the building despite the efforts we make. And to that point, Superintendent, the commission understands that the recent $60 million that went out, while it was a process where there was a scoring system, they broke the state down into six categories, the Northeast, the Southwest, and so on, looked at the population and decided to give so much money of the $40 million out in each of those six districts. The PCCD, the Pennsylvania Department of Crime and Delinquency, facilitated the process. They hired outside reviewers to look at the criteria based on the surveys and the grant applications. Unfortunately, what came out of that process is that some school districts had paid grant writers and so on and so forth, and I think there was an imbalance of data that caused some of the school districts that I know should have gotten some of the money to do the things that they want to do. We're going to try and right the ship. Everyone on the commission looked at the recipients. I think in one case we had, I can find a number here, 638 applications requesting a total of $177 million, of which we granted 234 of the 638 for $40 million. So you can see that there was a big gap, almost 400 applicants that didn't receive anything on the $40 million that was dispersed. And when I saw that number, I knew we were going to have an imbalance. So, and the other thing I want to mention, Mark brought it up, every school, regardless of the baseline, this is important to me, local school board members are elected. They should have the independence to do what they want to do beyond baseline. So there will be no restrictions on what you can do if you have the financial wherewithal to do that. I want to make that clear. This is not to usurp the authority of local school boards. I'm a fan of local school boards. They give of their time, and they support their superintendents, and they know on the ground level what the teachers and the students need to keep folks safe. On the second issue, Superintendent, yes, the charter school issue is an issue, and it's an expensive issue. Many of the school districts in my Senate district are paying millions of dollars in charter school funding. And I don't want this to be a comment that I'm opposed to charters. What I want to have happen, and we must do this, we must make the charter school process a partnership and a business relationship with the public schools. In other words, we need to make sure, number one, that the amount that we're paying per student reflects the amount that it costs to educate the student in the charter school. That's a big fight right now. Busing is an expensive event, and the public schools are still responsible for the busing of charter school students. And a lot of folks that pay their school taxes are unaware of these things. And there's other things in there, but I don't want to make it look like it's a charter school bashing. It is not. We need to fix that problem because money that could be used in the public school system, superintendents have to sit down or create a budget with their school boards, and now they have to calculate, what are we paying this year for charter school? Is it $1 million? Is it $2 million? I have one school district that's paying over $15 million, and I can assure you that the taxpayers in those communities have no idea that's happening, and we can fix that. And the thing that I'm bothered most about that is local elected school boards, and people can debate. Nobody likes to pay school taxes. We understand that, and we're trying to deal with that issue. But when it comes to a charter school, there is no elected school board oversight of that establishment, and therein lies the problem. The stewards of your school taxes are your local elected school board members. They should have more oversight of what they have to give to the charter schools by way of busing, by way of tuition reimbursement, and that sort of thing. And I won't get into the whole discussion about performance. That's another call for another day. But Superintendent Holtzman, thank you for your call. We're going to try and correct the problem. For any of those other school districts that are listening and did not get any funding in the second round, we're going to try and correct that as we get into 2019 and 20.
Mark, thank you very much for your call. Before we go to the next caller, Senator, just a reminder for those that have just gotten on the line, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 in your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Terry in Braddock. Terry, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Hello, Senator Brewster. Thank you for holding the town hall, and thank you for the work that you provide our district. I think you answered part of my question number one. I was going to ask about how you came up with the determination of schools, and I heard you when you said there were 638 schools and 234 were granted their grant for school safety. So I'll go to my next question. I wanted to know if you could expound a little bit more on the blue box, because when you talked about the school safety process, and you talked about physical security, and under that you mentioned metal detectors, cameras, and blue boxes. So can you please explain the blue boxes a little bit more in depth?
Well, thank you, Terry, for your call. I'm going to give Big Vista Central Catholic a shout-out. I happen to see it on the news. Apparently it's a box in the hallways of the schools. I don't know all the detail of it, Terry, but it's a lot like the fire alarm box. So if a student sees an active shooter or something somebody in the school that shouldn't be there, that box is electronically hooked up, but I believe it goes directly to the police. So, I mean, oftentimes our children will see things that they know is absolutely wrong. It may be something just as simple as another student with a weapon, and you don't have time to get to the principal's office or to the teacher. So I'm going to get more detail on the technology itself, but it's inexpensive. It's just as simple as the fire alarm box that you see in your schools, and that was just one that we happened to see on the nightly news, and I said, gee, that's a pretty good idea. Okay. So, you know, I think if you think, you know, again, we have to have procedures in place, because we just say fireboxes. We don't want everybody grabbing a box and have the police there every 5 minutes. But you know, that's where procedures and training, and as you know, Terry, the old fire drills, we used to go outside. I mean, we need to have active shooter drills to go outside, and so that students, even young students today, are pretty bright. Even at the early age, they know right from wrong, and if they're given a little bit of training on how to evacuate the building, or whether to use the blue box or the red box, or find a teacher that's close by, even if it's not their teacher, these are the things that are going to be in the baseline. Since you brought it up, so that everybody in that community will know what the school safety baseline procedures are, not just the physical things and not just the hotlines where you can call for help if you have an addiction issue, and not just the air monitoring equipment outside the building. It'll be, what do you do personally? And this is where the drills and the training have to happen with regularity. I've talked to some schools that haven't had an active shooter drill at all yet, which to me I find hard to imagine. Now, some of this is about time, some of it's about leadership. I can only speak about my school districts, who I know are all of them are on top of these things. I've talked to school districts in other areas and even in other states where they don't even have metal detectors. So the blue box is just part of it, Terry. Again, a distribution of money in terms of the next round. I'm looking to see here. Woodland Hills did get some money, and not a lot. And it needs to be more. But I think you're on top of this. And as technology is developed, we're going to get that out to your school boards and to your superintendents, because I don't want to tell anybody what they're going to have to do. I want their opinion if they think it's going to work. And to another point, Terry, which I'm glad you called, one of the things that will happen with this baseline security is this commission, which has 17 members, will stay in place. There may be new members, but it will be a commission that will stay in place. And every year they will be responsible for reviewing the baseline to make sure the baseline is working. And they'll do that by getting feedback from your school boards association, your parent teachers organization, your superintendents, and your school boards. There may be something after a year or two we may decide no longer is beneficial. There may be some new technology out there that comes out of the woodwork, and we know it's going to happen, that we may want to add to the baseline. So thank you, Terry, for your call.
Terry, thank you very much for your call, Senator. We're going to go back to the callers, but before we do, again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad. We're going to go to Dan in Plum. Dan, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Thank you, Senator, for taking my call. When you're talking about these appropriations for the different school districts, one of the requirements I think needs to be put in there is that they need to get metal detectors in all the schools, Senator. Is that one of the requirements?
I don't want to interrupt you, Dan. Is there something else you want to say other than that?
No, I just wanted to, talk about the metal detectors. I think it's very important that they should be in every school.
Okay. The answer to your question is yes, it'll be in the baseline. Most of the schools that I've talked to have them. They're not expensive, but they are if you don't have any money. And there are school districts, and I just keep reminding folks, you've got 500 school districts, and if you were to tour those 500, you would see a tremendous difference in the physical layout, the age of the buildings, and so forth. But the metal detectors are pretty much standard, whether the building is 80 years old or 8 days old. And yes, that the metal detectors, in my opinion, will definitely be in the baseline and will be mandatory and will be audited too, so that if they are auditor general, if he buys off on the concept, and I think he will, when he does an audit of your school district, if you don't have them, you will be written up in pretty quick fashion.
Dan, thank you very much for your call, Senator. We're going to go back to the callers. Again, if you have a question for Senator Brewster, press star 3. On your phone's keypad. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Don. Don, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Yes, good evening, Senator, and thanks for the call. I'm the superintendent within the East Allegheny School District. The East Allegheny School District this past year was fortunate to receive both portions of that safety grant, which you sponsored. And on behalf of myself and the district, I just want to thank you for your efforts. Also, I would like to commend you on your views concerning the mental health needs within our schools. You know, it's unfortunate at times these issues are somewhat overlooked and emphasis is placed on the physical components of safety. And please don't misunderstand me. Those physical components are very important. But I do agree with you, Senator. There must be an emphasis on mental health. The personal trauma of some of our school-age students, it is just as important. And I would just like to urge your colleagues to take heed to what you're saying, because it needs to be addressed within all our schools throughout the Commonwealth. Once again, thank you for your efforts, and I thank you on behalf of myself and the East Allegheny School District.
Thank you, Don, and again, thank you and your school board and your teachers for the work they do. I know some of the obstacles that you've had to overcome at East Allegheny. It's a great district, represents great communities, and, we're starting to hear more and more about the mental health You know, I've been saying this now for several years that some of the events that have occurred in some of the schools throughout the country, it is, I think everybody would agree, it is absolutely not normal behavior to go into a school and do harm to children and teachers and staff. That is somebody that has an issue, and I deal with a lot of folks that are in the mental health business, and they do tremendous work. And this isn't to suggest that everybody with a mental health issue is going to create and go in and do harm to somebody. However, we need to make sure, I know teachers personally, I know the torment they go through when they come home, when they know that there's something going on in a family, and they have no idea where to go with it. Most of them do, but some don't. And we have to make sure there's an outlet here. If you look at the Parkland event, for example, I was struck by the fact when they interviewed some of the students. The students, as a rule, and the teachers and know what's going on. And how do you go to somebody and say, this person has a mental health issue, and I know he's going to do harm to himself or somebody else? That's a pretty gray area, and you can't guess, but yet you can't overlook the obvious. And the students knew that the individual at Parkland was very capable through his conversations and his behavior of doing something like this. And so when you have a situation where the message is clear that an individual is walking through school, or maybe that person just graduated and said, listen, I never liked this teacher, I didn't like this student, I didn't like this coach, and I sure didn't like my principal, and I'm not going to forget what they did to me. That is a phone call, and now we have the Safe to Say legislation, which has been very helpful, by the way, on this issue. And we have to find a way, still respecting HIPAA, still respecting people's rights, and not violating anybody's rights as a student or as a parent of a student. But we have to find a way to talk about this, because to me, all of these events, if you had some place to go, you may have been able to stop it. And I believe throughout the country, there's been some that have stopped. I don't want to misquote the numbers, Dawn, but I think on the Safe to Say legislation, there were several thousand calls received. Yes. And to the Attorney General. And by the way, the Attorney General, like our Auditor General, are doing a great job on these issues. They're working diligently with their staff. I believe they responded to about a couple thousand. Mm-hmm. And a high percentage of those were suicide calls, and you know, which is just terrifying to me, that 30% of 2,000 of the calls were either someone reporting that a friend's considering suicide or that they were considering suicide. And without that legislation, without that hotline, who would they have talked to? Now, we don't know. Maybe a friend, maybe a relative, maybe a teacher. We don't know. But that's why the mental health is going to be part of the baseline. We need to make sure that we have professional people that are available through local agencies or through hotlines so that somebody can pick a phone up and say, look, here's what I know. I'm not positive, but I wanted to tell somebody. And so your comments about mental health is most important, Dawn. And again, thank you to you and your school board and your teachers and parents for working so hard at East Allegheny. Great job.
Dawn, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Dennis. Dennis, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Good evening, Senator Brewster. My question ties in with what several people have said, like the superintendent of McKeesport. I would like to know why we don't allow employees in a school building to carry guns on a voluntary basis. If a person says, hey, I'll carry a gun and I'll try and take care of the kids, that would, I think, and make that a public announced policy so that anyone who gets a bright idea that he's going to go to some public building and start shooting up people, he will think, hey, there could be a guy in that building with a machine gun. I don't know. I also have a second part to my suggestion, which I don't want to give over the phone. I don't want people to hear it. So if you could have someone talk to me after we stop talking, or if the woman who took my call initially can remember what I told her, that would make a second contact unnecessary. So why don't we have guns in schools on a voluntary basis?
Okay, Dennis, let me, your second part, I will have somebody call you as soon as we're done with our call-in session. We have your phone number here. On the guns, okay, first of all, we have school districts that do have retired municipal police officers in the building. We just recently passed a bill. There's no bill out there now making it mandatory. Personally, I understand your point. Don White, he's retired, had a bill to do just that. But those are the decisions that I think your local school boards should make the decision. I have several school districts in my senatorial district that have armed guards. I believe that that's one option. I will tell you that the concern everybody has about making it just somebody that can use a gun is the training. There's a huge liability issue. There are people that think that the gun may end up in the wrong hands if it's kept in the school. But I can tell you that where school districts, and I was at Gateway School District, and their school directors do a great job. Mary Beth, I know we worked with her. She's on the school board of Gateway, and their superintendent and principals. They have retired state troopers, and it's a very sophisticated security system with cameras, with metal detectors, and they are armed, and they do a fantastic job. But it's controlled. It's supervised. They're professionals, and I think that's the issue. When we get to the point where you need a response with a weapon, we want to make sure that the training is there. And I use the example. Look, we wish we didn't have to have this conversation, but when there's an event at a school, the first thing you see, thank God, is 100 people there with weapons. And one could make the case that if the weapon was already there in defense of the teachers and the students, that maybe the damage could have been reduced. So that is a theory that's out there. It's one that I subscribe to. But mandatory weapons in the schools will not be mandatory. That will be left to the decision of local school boards to do that if they care to. But we will put in the baseline that whoever you use, they will have the mandatory training required. And for those that understand the MOPEC training or the Act 120 that the police have to have, Act 235, it won't be somebody whose friend is good with a gun. That's not who's going to be there. It's going to be somebody that can show that they have the certification and that they're recertified on a yearly basis. So that's a discussion that will come up going forward. And I just want to close the comment on your call. You know, and I don't want to say this on the phone either, but let's face it. When we finally figure out how to stop weapons from getting into school, human beings are pretty unique. The Internet, unfortunately, is way too available to young people. Folks will find another way to harm people. It may not be a gun. And I don't want to talk about that, but that's the real world we live in. And if you look at some of the horrific events, whether it be the Boston Marathon or whether it be the Oklahoma bomber, things of those nature, you know, guns are a conveniency right now. But I would submit to you in the next 5 years, unfortunately, there's going to be other methods used. And that's why the baseline is important to me, because each year as we hear of things or see things and find things on the Internet, we can adjust our protocol on the baseline. Now, can we always be ahead of the curve? Probably not, but we'll be much better off than what we are now because everybody's scrambling around to do the best they can do with what they have. But I'm fearful of what the future holds, and we're going to continue to monitor that.
Dennis, thank you very much for your caller, Senator. We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Jim in McKeesport. Jim, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Hi, Senator Brewster. Jim Post, and I'm on the school board at McKeesport School District.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, just a quick question I had was, you know, since that money was dispersed out on the first half, on next year's, or the people that did not receive it, are they going to have a better chance of receiving some of it? I know it makes it fair that everybody can still apply for it.
You there, Jim?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, well, as I said earlier, Jim, we're going to revisit the process. The reviewers that reviewed the applications, and as I said, there were over 600 and a little over 200 got funded. There were 21 different criteria, and there were points affixed to the applications. For example, the executive summary was 5 points. The statement of the purpose of the grant was 35 points. Project description was 45 points. Trying to get to 100 here. So when they reviewed the applications, some of the schools, when they sent the applications in, qualified or had shown that they had achieved 6 or 7 different security elements in the criteria, and their grant application built upon that base and created an environment which a reviewer would think would be a good strategy for security, and that funding would help bring them to closure on their project. Other schools only qualified under one category, generally the physical security piece. There are other things in there, Jim, that I want to just, I mean, I'll throw them out. Classroom management, student code of conduct, school-based diversion programs, peer helper programs. These were the things that were reviewed by the reviewers, and there are many more. And some of them were very comprehensive. That's not to suggest that some of the grant applications, the school districts weren't doing some of those things. They simply didn't have them in their application. And that was the process of writing the grant. So I don't want to suggest that if you didn't get money, that your school district is not doing some of these things. Superintendent Holtzman made the point that many of these things inside the building are already being done and covered by the administration and the teachers and staff on board. But if I'm not saying this is McKeesport, but some of the applications were very vague and very brief, and that's why they were not funded. We understand that did not suggest that that school shouldn't have gotten any money. They just didn't get it based on the criteria that was put before the reviewers. We as a group, as a commission, recognized after the money was distributed and after we got a list of all the recipients in each of the six areas of the state that we missed opportunities. And there were a number of suggestions. For example, if we gave money to 234 school districts out of 638, should we start with 235 and go forward for those that didn't get any? That's one suggestion. Should we ask school districts to reapply? Even though some of the applications were weak, I'm not sure that's necessary, because each school district did fill out a survey. We could possibly use that document to fill some of the voids that may have been in the grant application. But we understand your call, Jim, and we're going to try and correct that in this year's distribution.
Jim, thank you very much for your call.
Thanks, Jim.
Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Chris. Chris, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster. Chris,
hi,
are you there?
Senator Brewster. I'm Chris from Aldenboro. What I was thinking about is what you had said about more mental health help in the schools, and I totally agree with that. What I also thought is there, being a parent of a child that had mental health issues, I really didn't recognize it. He was my fourth, and I think there really needs to be a public service announcement, especially because a lot of the active shooters are you know, young teens and some of the family are surprised that their kids go and do what they do. Of course, my son never did anything like that, but he did threaten. And what he needed was more mental health help, and we got that for him. But we also had to send him to an approved private school where that's what they had. Whenever you really needed help, you could leave your class and go talk to somebody. But I really always thought there should be a public service announcement that says, is your child isolated? Is your child, has his appetite changed? Are his sleep patterns different? You know, not the same, sleeping more, sleeping very little. Just maybe five things that would give parents a heads up that, especially if they have guns in the house, we did not, that they need to either get them out of the house for their teen safety, too, because they could hurt themselves because there is a high risk of teen suicide, but especially for the safety of other classmates. So that was my, I really just thought there should be a public service announcement, and I was going to say that there is a program that they are having in schools right now. It's called the Be Smart program, and the SMART is an acronym that stands for stuff like storage and modeling and proper gun habits. But it teaches parents, even parents that are like, I have a coworker and she's a teacher, and she didn't know that you can store your gun in a safe that, you know, will open with just your fingerprint or some easily. So, you know, it's still easily accessible to you, but not to the kids in the home. And that's all. I thought about the Be Smart program maybe for more schools, and also possibly a public service announcement, because really I was clueless and he was my fourth. You know, I didn't know.
Well, Chris, thank you for your call. Do you mind if I have a staff member call you maybe tomorrow? I have your phone number here. I don't want to do that.
No,
if
I
you
don't mind.
I'd like to talk to you more about that.
Sure.
Good luck with your child. You hit the nail on the head on.
Oh, he's done a lot better. It's been about 15 years, and he's really gone a lot farther than we thought he would. He's done wonderfully.
Well, that's
yeah, we're thrilled. But
I see you're a success story, and that's exactly what I'm trying to accomplish with the mental health aspect of the baseline. I need folks to tell us where they've done things that worked and where they've done things where they didn't work. Because oftentimes, you're right, the parents are shocked whenever there's an event that involves their child. Now, and I didn't, frankly, the issues that we've seen, of course, we've seen on television, but the parents seemed, for the most part, like they were concerned parents. It wasn't, and people have this idea that it's always going to be a former student or a student that's just running the streets at all hours of the night. That's not the case. And that's what makes this so complicated. But I'd like to talk to you a little more about that, because the SMART program, the public service announcement, those things are all very possible and they're not expensive. And we can do some of those things in the schools. We can do them through the state. It's a great suggestion, a great idea, and we have to somehow get into the minds of folks without being intrusive and without making them feel afraid. I can go back to fifth grade, and I had, you know, good parents. I mean, sixth grade, some of the loneliest times of my life, because, you know, things are changing for you, and maybe you don't want to talk to your mother or your dad about it, or maybe you're embarrassed to talk about a friend, but it's a learning process we all go through, and some are a little more reluctant to talk about the issues they're faced with at that fifth, sixth. I mean, when you get into junior high school, you want to see a difference in children between someone who looks like they're 18 versus someone who might be 13. I don't have to tell you. So who do you talk to? And I think this ability to have this outlet for people to do things without fear of reprisal, without fear of embarrassment, knowing that that these services are there, whether it be SMART or whatever, are here to help you. It's and it's a maturity thing for, I think, the students as well. So we're right on target with you. If you don't mind, maybe tomorrow, so I'll just give you a check. I appreciate you sharing with you what you went through, because it really just adds to the fact that if we take that's no, it's tedious, it's complicated, it's personal to talk about mental health, it's expensive, but we have agencies out there that are willing to help and can help. We have to connect the dots between the person that needs the help, the family that needs the help, and the agencies that are there. And where there's no agencies, whether it be public announcements, we need to get to that point. So thank you very much for your call.
Chris, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Connie. Connie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Brewster.
Hi, Senator. I'm with a school board member at East Allegheny School District, and again, wanted to thank you for the funding that we received, which we will be starting having armed security, well, police officer, not security guard, in our building. As far as the comment about teachers having guns, guns are not the solution to the problems that we have in our schools and in society in general. And I think that's an awful lot of responsibility to put on a teacher to have a gun in their classroom. And then my biggest comment is about mental health in the schools. My job is a borough manager in East McKeesport. And what I see with children that come into the station, that have interaction with the police, our children have so many problems today, and they don't know where to go to get the help they need. Our children today in society in general are seeing a lot of trauma in their life at a very young age and don't know how to cope with it. And I think a good idea also would be to come in the schools and talk to the kids that it's okay that we all have problems. I think the kids have a misconception that there's something wrong with them because, you know, they're feeling this way or that way. And even if you would be able to find, I don't want to say celebrities, but adults that they might know of or look up to that can talk about mental health issues and that it's nothing to be ashamed of and to reach out and get help would do our children a great service.
Thank you, Connie, for the call, and thank you for the work you do. And I agree with you 100%. Most teachers are not anxious to be armed and to train that audience. They have work to do teaching. But as you said, you're looking at trained armed police officers in the school. That's a different equation, and the training is significant. It's never intended to have 100 people in a school with a weapon. To have armed help in there with the proper training is, in my mind, clearly an asset. So the training is the key. But the mental health, as you mentioned, Connie, you're right. I mean, some of the police departments do a magnificent job. Some of our local elected officials, I know our president of the council in Braddock and some of these folks are really working hard. We have a relatively new superintendent within Neil's doing a great job. I mean, I can I can list all the different accomplishments in my school districts, and I don't want to leave anybody out because they're all doing a tremendous job with what they have to work with, whether it be Clarendon, South Allegheny, East Allegheny, McKeesport, you name it, Borough, New Kensington, Gateway, Plum. Just doing a really great job. What I want to do is where there's a good idea being used in a school district now, Connie, I want to see if it's appropriate to have it on the baseline. If it is, we want to make sure we can fund it so taxpayers don't have to worry about tax increases. I know we don't want to talk about money and the health and safety of children, but I don't want folks to resist change or resist help because they're worried about the money. Let me worry about the money, okay? And I need ideas from all the experts that are in the field, school directors like yourself, superintendents, parents, even students. We want to reach out to students because I think the assets that we need to deal with the mental health issue, for example, I think we have them. I think we support them through the budget, throughout the Commonwealth. And it's funny, no one has brought up the environment, but, you know, every year it seems like, well, such and such school can't open because they found mold in the classroom. Well, we shouldn't find mold in the classroom the day before we open up. And these are kind of things that then people start thinking, well, gee, is my school safe? Yeah, it's safe. There was just, they found some mold in one room, but it's all over the news. Those are the things that cause parents to be concerned. We can put that in a baseline, and those things won't happen. There'll be a process to deal with mold, asbestos, air quality, lead in the water, whatever it may be. But the baseline is not going to be, in my opinion, an expensive piece of legislation. It's going to be more of oversight. And the thing I like most about it, Connie, is that, as I said earlier, this commission will be challenged each year to review the components of this baseline, physical, mental health, and environmental. And those baselines could change up or down, depending on the needs, depending on the technology that's available, depending on what, God forbid, that there be any more events, what's different from future events, from past events. They're not going to stay the same. So it's, you know, it's difficult to deal with someone who wants to do harm, and the only person that knows what that person's thinking about, as a rule, is that person. You might have some hints from other students, or you might have a hint from a neighbor, but you can't work off hints all the time. We have to be prepared to expect the unexpected. And so it's not going to be easy, but I feel we're onto something here. Some of the comments I've heard tonight are new, which is great. Some of them confirm the things we want to do, which is great. And as we, in fact, because we have so many calls, we may do another one of these in future months because I want to continue to gather data. I don't want this to be Jim Brewster's idea. I want this to be 12.5 million people's legislation so that teachers, staff, and students and parents and community leaders, mayors, police chiefs can all feel comfortable. We all know what to do when XYZ happens. We're all on the same page, and we have a spontaneous reaction to any event. And so that's where we're headed, Connie. But thank you for the call, and thank you for the work you do.
Connie, thank you very much for the call, Senator. I know we're coming down the home stretch here. You have some concluding comments for those that have joined us.
Well, I want to thank those that participated in our telephone town hall discussion. To those who listened in, hopefully you'll call in the future. To those who shared their opinions, we're going to incorporate them into what we already have. And the questions were excellent. This has been a great discussion. I can promise you we'll have another one of these in the next few months because there are so many people that were on that didn't get a chance to speak. We're going to follow up with a couple of the calls. And for those who couldn't get through, don't hesitate to call my offices. I have satellite offices in almost every community. Our principal offices are in Monroeville and McKeesport and New Kensington. Stop in, call in, send an email, and we will certainly respond. And thank you all for participating tonight. And thank you for your kindness as a monitor.
Well, thank you, Senator. And again, just to follow up with the Senator, if you didn't have a chance to ask your question this evening, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question and a voicemail for Senator Brewster and his staff, and they'll get back to you. Again, thank you for participating. If you have additional questions, you can call Senator Brewster's office at 412-380-2242, and his website is senatorbrewster.com. You've been a wonderful audience, and enjoy the rest of your evening.